Good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday. This is Reverend Koyo Kubose here, and I'm so glad you joined us today. Here in Central California, we call it the Valley Heat during the summer, and triple digits is the norm. When it's in the 90s, it feels not very hot, you know. That triple digit is our psychological threshold for heat. But I think our triple digits days are over. Just a few days ago, we did have triple digits. But now I see the weather forecast for the next few weeks is going to be in the low 90s or even high 80s. And we've had a little bit of rain started. Summer is always dry. Not a speck of rain. Our rainy season is in the winter. And we had our first nice rain yesterday, last night. And it's still overcast this morning. And it's a beautiful day. Rain or shine, every day is a good day. Well, today's guest for giving us a Dharma glimpse is Morris Sekiel Sullivan. He lives in Deland, Florida. And he was part of the group that traveled to Coarse Gold here last May to be inducted as a Bright Dawn Lay Minister. So for today's Dharma Glimpse, Sekiel Sensei.
Yes, thank you, Reverend Kubose, and good morning, everyone. Next week would have been John Lennon's 70th birthday. Since I realized that, I started thinking a lot about how songs like Give Peace a Chance influence the way I relate to the world and to ideas like peace. And so I thought this might be a good time to talk about how we could, as individuals, try giving peace a chance. I think we sometimes think of peace as something that's out there, something to be attained, a vague, nebulous spiritual quality, or perhaps something beyond our control, something we hope for but never see. But if we think about the idea of giving peace a chance, that makes peace something active. Rather than just a static concept, it can become a practice. So how would we make peace into a practice? Like any other practice, we can endeavor to cultivate those things which lead to peace and to abandon those things which lead to violence. Once, when his monks were arguing among themselves, the Buddha called them together and told them the story of Durgayu. Durgayu was a prince whose father's land, wealth, and power was seized by a rival king named Brahmadatta, who also ordered Durgayu's father and mother publicly humiliated and then cruelly executed. Some years later, Durgayu had his chance for revenge, but as he held his sword to Brahmadatta's throat, with the king begging for his life, Durgayu remembered what his father had told him just before he died, that he should always consider the consequences his actions would have, not just for himself, but for his friends and followers. And he should always bear in mind that violence is never appeased by violence. Violence can only be conquered by nonviolence. Durgayu lowered his sword and explained to the relieved and surprised king that if he killed Brahmadatta, Brahmadatta's partisans would no doubt retaliate. And then Durgayu's partisans would seek revenge, and a long cycle of violence would follow. It was better, he felt, to put an end to this war before it could begin. Durgayu's father had taught him to value peace. And if we truly deeply value peace, then our intentions will be peaceful ones. I don't mean intentions the way we say we intend to do something, but we end up doing something else instead. I mean the intentions that arise from our core values, our most heartfelt views. Those are the intentions that lead to action. If our intention is to create war, we will have war. But if our intention is to create peace, we will speak and act and work to abandon violence and cultivate peace. If we diligently maintain vigilance over our intentions, keeping foremost in our hearts the knowledge that violence cannot be appeased by violence, but only by nonviolence, then we will nurture a peaceful heart. You might wonder how cultivating a peaceful heart could bring peace to a world that sometimes seems so consumed by violence. And I agree that it's important to work toward social justice and toward peace between nations. But as a community, whether a global community, a nation, or a group of folks listening to the Dharma on a Sunday morning in cyberspace together, If we want peace, we must maintain our awareness that peace is good for all of us and that our actions have consequences that may continue long after we have gone. One day, governments may stop sending soldiers into battle, but we should remember as individuals that no matter what's going on out there, there will never be peace in our world as long as there is war in our hearts. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, sort of independently, this early this morning, I was thinking about what I was going to talk about, and a phrase stuck in my mind. I guess maybe it's an anti-war slogan, but it says, there's no way to peace. Peace is the way. And I sort of wanted to talk about that. What are the implications of that saying or slogan? And there's also the popular phrase of, you have to be the change you want to see in the world. And I think this is very Buddhistic in the sense that first, know yourself. You know? Now, I would imagine that there are a lot of people who work for social justice and peace, which is tremendous. Nobel Peace Prizes can be given out. And their private lives are sort of a mess. I think we should not say, oh, our heroes have feet of sand or think less of them for their work. In fact, in today's Sunday Parade magazine, there's an interview with Elliot Spitzer, who is Attorney General in New York, and he, as you know, was disgraced. He was a moral crusader, and yet he got caught soliciting a prostitute, and he got, he's been off the radar for a couple of years now, and wants to come back in public service. He's giving this interview, and he's saying, "Hey, I did wrong, and I learned a lot from failure." Much more than you learn from success. And near the end of the interview, the interviewer said that Martin Luther King Jr., his biographer, once told me that King took great chances in his public life because he wanted to atone for the inner issues he was struggling with. And Spitzer says, yes, that's interesting. That King felt compelled to push hard in order to seek the redemption he believed was necessary. And that's the great tension. We are better at understanding morality than we are at living it. That's one of the great, curses of mankind. And we're the only species that has this moral sensibility. And we're blessed with having that moral sensibility, but we're cursed in our inability to abide by it. In other words, we're human beings. So someone may be a great advocate for peace in a social sense between nations and yet be a tyrant in his own home with fits of anger and not treating close family members with respect and kindness. And I think the challenge for all of us, regardless of whether we're in a position, social position, or a role to influence on a more global, wider scale, if we're worth our salt, we have to be endeavoring to be the change we want in the world, we want to not only work for justice and peace, but we want to have the intention at the core values level of how we want to live as an individual. It's commendable when we find skillful means to implement nonviolence to help bring it about. And I think that that's enhanced if we have the motivation that peace, that we want peace. There's a phrase that is sort of a closing words. We don't say prayer in Buddhism, but peace within and harmony with others. That's a very laudable goal, personal goal to have. You know, I want to be the kind of person that has peace within and harmony with others. And not so much, isn't that a good virtue or virtues? And I want to somehow find the ways that will lead to that. Well, like I said, maybe that's fine, but maybe a more effective way is to say, well, I'm not going to concentrate so much on finding the ways to how to practice to bring that about. But first, I've got to say, is this what I really want? Is this my deepest value? Is this my deepest intention? Is this my primal wish for being alive, for being who I am? Not just another self-improvement project. I mean, this might sound funny saying it like that, but very fundamentally, sometimes there's a saying, hey, how can you go south when your heart is facing north? Very basic attitude, philosophy of life, whatever you want to call it, you know, at your core, at your foundation, your very life. Is there that clarity and then commitment? I was thinking, I have some examples of what gets us upset when we feel we have been wronged, when others are stupid, when we lose our patience, when we get irritated, when we blame and criticize others, and we don't look at ourselves. There are a lot of examples like that, and there's some humorous illustrations of this, and I've collected some of those over the years. And, for example, there was one general who was going to inspect the troops. They're all lined up, inspectors strutting along the line. He comes to a private, and he sees that the private's shirt button in the pocket is unbuttoned. He says, you've got to dress properly and sharp. Button that button. And the private looked at him. Button it! And the private looked at him and says, right now? Yes, right now! And so the private leaned forward and buttoned the pocket button of the general. Well, sometimes we see something wrong out there, and we have our own exact same own fault, like Spitzer maybe. a moral crusader, and yet he's also flawed. But somehow you don't see it, you repress it, you ignore it, you deny it, because you see your responsibility as maintaining and improving, shaping up others. There was another example of a train conductor. He collects tickets on the train, and he rushes to, one morning he was sort of a little bit late, so he rushed to his job, came into the Union Station, and a lot of train tracks there going all over, and it's a busy place, you know, and he gets on his train, and he starts to walk down the aisle, and he says, tickets, tickets, and the first guy gets a ticket, he goes, hey, you're on the wrong train. You better, you know, then he gets another guy, says, hey, you're on the wrong train too. And he gets, looks at the third ticket, and it dawns on him that they're all on the right train. He's on the wrong train. And yet he was getting all irritated. Hey, look at all these stupid people. We learn more by our failures than our successes. Then there's this classic story about an admiral in the Navy. He's on a ship, big destroyer ship, and they're cruising on down, and it's very foggy in at night. But of course they got sonar, and the navigator says, beep, 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 hey, there's something out there. Is it another ship? Why don't you send a signal, dot, 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 whatever. And says, this is USS so-and-so, and we're right in front of you, right in front of us. Please move to the port side so many degrees. In other words, get out of our way. Okay. And the message came back, no, you better go to the starboard side so many degrees and so forth. In other words, you get out of our way. And the admiral gets enraged, you know, he says, hey, he's the top admiral of the whole Navy. And he's on this big old destroyer cruiser ship going forward and important business and everything. And he says, tell him to move on our way. We're getting closer, closer. And the navigator says, oh, da, 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 da. Move quick, move quick. And then he says, if you don't, I am Admiral so-and-so. Tell him that. And then the answer comes back, I am a lighthouse. Well, sometimes these stories, the teaching or moral of these kind of stories is, okay, our problems are caused by our self-centered ego, you know, and we don't see things as they are. And that's okay as far as it goes. I was thinking, no, wait a minute, why is that not sufficient to transform us or to have impact on us? And one reason is, I think, because there are a lot of times when we are right and the other person's wrong. That the train conductor has to deal with so many people, so many commuters, he runs into all kinds of people. And it's almost impossible not to get jaded and thick-skinned and with all the, you know, carelessness of people not doing a proper procedure and so forth. When you deal with people, they are in the wrong. There's going to be rude people. There's going to be mean people. And there's going to be a lot of instances of that in addition to when I am the one who has caused a problem to my own short-sightedness and self-centeredness and selfishness. You see, there are times when I'm the recipient. So this is what I mean by saying, hey, no way to peace. Peace is the way. We're going to have to say, no matter what the conditions, I'm not going to react. I'm going to be the change that I want to see out there. It doesn't matter who's right or wrong. And even when I am wrong, that is precisely the time when I need the Dharma teachings. I need to have skillful means to correct, to stop, to try to change the other. It's not what I do, it's how I do it. You know? It's not what or who, it's how and when. And there are some people who are not aggressive, outspoken. They're very quiet. And that's not an answer necessarily either. If they're not assertive and they don't make waves and they get pushed around, or when they're slighted, they don't react negatively. They just sort of take it. And they don't, you know. But they don't have peace within, I don't think. It's very possible that those quiet people, you find that they're very intolerant. They're very opinionated, and it could come out in other ways. You know, maybe they're not brash and outspoken about it, but you find that there's the same murky tormentedness and negativity inside them too. Okay. And of course, it's all a matter of degrees. And depending upon a lot of conditions or factors, their mood at the time or whatever the situation is that might bring it out. But my point is, it doesn't matter whether you're quiet or loud, whether they're right or wrong, came from externally, or whether we want to feel that we've been treated shabbily, or we want to martyr ourselves, or whether we want to go out and crusade. We have to know our direction and be grounded on that very fundamental primal wish of our life. And from that basis, then seek our justice, seek social change, without getting upset, through skillful means, with a calm, open, loving-kindness heart. If we're going to aim high, we might as well aim really high, and not just work for social change so hard because our inside's all messed up inside life. And that what that means is, no matter what station we have in life, what our social position is, that's the most fundamental calling we could have. Well, thank you. I was on a soapbox there, and that's good for me. That's all for today's broadcast. And I want to thank Sekyo Sensei for his Dharma Glimpse. And I wish you all peace in your own way, because you are so beautiful to me. And therefore, have a beautiful day.